Today on CityCast Denver. With a primary election coming up next Tuesday, we've been talking all week about which kind of Democrat is going to represent Central Denver. But honestly, most of the craziness in Colorado is on the Republican ballot. And it's got many unaffiliated voters, like me, thinking about casting a spoiler vote. So we brought in a true blue Democratic insider to give this GOP primary the Know Your Enemy treatment. And yeah, this one got a little explicit. Oh, and stick around until the end, because CityCast CEO David Plotz will be joining us for a conversation about journalism entrepreneurship, brought to you by CU Boulder. Today is Friday, June 24th, 2022. I'm Paul Caroli, and this is CityCast Denver. Politics is messy. That's what we're here for.
It's how close should I be? Is this good?
About a fist distance away.
Fistance?
Yeah.
Okay. A fistance.
A fistance. Shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Welcome back to CityCast Denver, the show about the city where weed is cheaper than gas.
Wow, Paul. Is that true?
I figured this out this morning. It literally is. Last week, I paid, now this stupidly, I went to a gas station on Colorado Boulevard, paid $5.15 a gallon. $5.15. I got a pre-roll joint earlier that day for $5.
It's a screaming deal. I guess it's not by volume, though.
No, I mean...
Like, how much is a gallon of weed?
Yeah, you can't really... Well, I was thinking about this, too, because my friendly neighborhood strip club, Dandy Dan's, whose marquee I, like, admire every day... they have like, come in and drink a beer instead of driving because it's cheaper.
It's like that NoFX song.
Yes.
You drink, you drive, you spill.
Yes.
Yeah.
You might spill your drink.
Right.
All right. Well, let's get into it because we're already kind of, we've been having fun here this morning. Bree's here, of course.
I'm here, of course. Sorry.
Welcome,
I'm
Bree. Here. We've been talking politics all week on the show.
I'm so over it, Paul.
Primary's on Tuesday. Only a few more days left.
Can't wait for it to be over.
Have you voted?
No.
Ballot sitting on the counter?
I was waiting for this conversation because I'm not sure what to do because does my vote matter?
Are you unaffiliated or?
I thought I was. I like went back and forth with this. I like unregistered and registered, and it was at the point before when you had to be registered with a party to primary.
Right.
And then they changed it and I never changed it back. But honestly, I'm not super stoked with the Democratic Party's work and I wish I was unaffiliated, but I do have a Democratic ballot and that's why I'm holding on to it because is it worth it?
I mean, mine's sitting on my counter and there are no competitive races on it. I live in Lakewood.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But my wife's name is on it, so I'm going to vote for her and turn it in.
Totally.
Well, you might have guessed who he is already by that brief personal detail about his counter and his wife. Our guest today is my favorite person to talk to about Colorado politics. He's a progressive voice in the Denver Post's opinion pages, at least for now.
Dang, Paul!
I mean, he's not wrong.
Give me a chance.
He's a co-host of the excellent Get More Smarter podcast. He's a political insider guy, consultant.
Let's go with that. Sure, insider.
Insider guy.
I've been called an operative, which I just think is like either like pretentious or badass, and I can't decide which.
I feel like you should probably get paid more if they're going to call you an operative. I'm not. I don't know anything about your income. I'm just saying that seems like a heavy title to have if you're not like, you know what I mean, a superhero.
I think it's like a used to be. Yeah, that's like an ex title.
Oh
yeah, former Democratic operative, current.
I'm always interested
dad.
How people describe us, you know. Yeah, dad.
Yeah.
Totally, that's why I identify. I'm like, well,
it's the only
I'm,
title that matters to me.
Yeah.
Well, there is one more we do have to mention, and this is a disclosure. Ian Silveri is here. He's also the husband to presumptive Democratic candidate for Congress, Brittany Pedersen. What district is it? 7?
You pronounced both of our names correctly, which is like a thing that never happens. So first of all, high five on that. And second of all, yes, it's the 7th congressional district.
Cool. Cool, man. Thanks.
Good job, Paul.
She gets Pedersen. I get Silver the second. I mean, it's all over the place. You got it in like 2 out of 2, man. Thank you.
Hey, this is my job. I'm a pro. Well, Ian, we wanted to have you on because of this whole election. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, a lot of Democrats in Colorado and around Denver are getting ballots where there's no choices on them.
Right.
There's literally only one candidate, but there's a lot of really interesting choices on the Republican ballot right now.
That's one way of putting it. I kind of look at it like, I mean, I'm a very obvious partisan, right? Like that, I worked for Democrats, I worked for the state Democratic Party. Like that's who I am, what I've done for a long time. it looks like one party. Yeah, sure, the primary may be boring in many parts of the state, but mm-hmm. it kind of looks like a party that has their shit together versus a party that does not. And that's kind of how I'm looking at this primary right now.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Are you saying that the Dems have their shit together?
On like a, are we prepared to weather what is likely to be a very, very bad midterm election, especially when compared with our opponents? Yeah.
Oh. I feel like I just learned about politics yesterday. I don't know why my mind is getting blown all of a sudden.
It's all delivery, Bree. You know
this
stuff.
I guess.
Bree, where are you at with this GOP primary? Have you been paying attention to any of this? Any of these characters? These people, like...
I try, and then I just, like, read one quote from one of them, and I'm like, are you a real person? And who are you fooling? Because whoever your base is, I'm offended for them that you're treating them this way. So that's how I feel about the GOP in Colorado.
Well, we're going to figure it out today. We're going to wade into this mess. We're going to take a deep breath, okay. And then we're going to go into a few of the big races. I thought it would be important to at least hit all of the races that are on Denver voters' ballots. So we're going to hit the GOP primary for governor, and then the Senate seat. Michael Bennett's Senate seat is up for grabs in the fall, and Secretary of State, which is the craziest one somehow.
The most normal race we have this year is the state treasurer's race.
Okay.
Totally normal election.
If we need a break, maybe in a few minutes, we can talk about that for a second and have just a cool
a political
period.
Palate cleanser.
Yeah. What's his favorite kind of gum? Oh, okay. Big Red. Okay. Yeah.
Big Red. Which tastes gross after like 3 minutes of chewing it, but go ahead. I mean, who eats Big Red anymore? That's the thing you get at a five and dime store. Which don't exist.
Big Red's fine. It's good gum.
Okay.
It's a good flavor.
Do you have the song stuck in your head right now, though? I do.
I don't know what song.
I'm not going to sing.
Does Big Red have a song?
Yeah, they had like a really
I only know the Juicy Fruit song.
We got to get into this. We're going to talk about, I think we should start with governor first.
Yep.
The big one. Jared Polis has been our governor for a while. A lot of people here seem to like him. Seems like kind of a shoe-in to get re-election. But I don't know. What do you think? Is that the case here, Ian?
I mean, like current polling agrees with you, right? So when I was at Progress Now, we worked with a polling firm called Global Strategy Group to do this quarterly survey called The Mountaineer. And it backs up what you're saying here. Jared Polis not only has pretty good favorability rating. So you ask the voters, do you have a favorable or unfavorable rating of this politician? 53% of Coloradans said favorable and 38% said unfavorable, with 9% saying they don't know. So that's a 15 point, what we call net favorability rating. So 15% more people rated him favorably than unfavorably. And his job performance is even better than that, weirdly enough. So they might not like the guy, but they like the job he's doing, which is interesting. Polis has a 56% job approval rating. That's versus his 53% personal approval rating, so it's 3 points higher. And then when you look at the Polis versus a generic Republican, or you match him up to either Heidi Ginnall or Greg Lopez, who are the two Republican potential nominees for governor, he wipes the floor with both of them. He beats Ginnall by 17 points. He beats Lopez by 14 points.
So he's fine.
I mean, it's a long campaign.
True.
It's early still. These Republicans are relatively undefined, mostly because it seems like they forgot to campaign until pretty recently. Like...
Also, what are they campaigning on? I mean, that might be part of the problem is they just showed up.
Did you listen to Ryan Warner's excellent interview with both of them
over
the last week? All right, so it's worth your time. He sat down with Ginnall and Lopez for 40 minutes each. And it seemed like they were just avoiding answering questions the entire time.
That's what I've gotten from coverage, from reading about these two candidates, is that they just are not answering the questions.
I mean, my theory is like they forgot to campaign. They realized that the primary is next Tuesday. And now they can, if we go on CPR, at least people on the radio will hear us, right? But then they went on there and I can't for the life of me conceive of a voter who was undecided, who then listened to both of those interviews and goes, now I got it.
Yeah.
It was like a content-free experience.
Can I just say, like, what voters in the Republican primary in Colorado is listening to the NPR affiliates interview?
The unaffiliated ones.
So this is actually a...
I think real? So. Yeah. Well, so CPR has an amazing share. They have a huge listenership in the state. They're one of the most successful public radio stations in the country. But if you're an unaffiliated voter and you get a Republican ballot and you're listening to these two interviews, I think more affiliated voters will vote in the Republican primary than the Democratic primary. I can't say for sure who they'll choose. That's what the establishment wants you to think, right? They want you to think Heidi Gonal is a moderate and Greg Lopez is some kind of right winger. But the truth is the daylight between them on issues is pretty narrow. Like, I can't right now off the top of my head, having listened to both of them talk, give you a substantial policy difference between the two of them, mostly because they don't really tend to take stances.
Yeah, I was like, did Greg Lopez have any policies? Because his entire issues page on his website was plagiarized.
It's amazing stuff. I mean, it really is. It's wonderful.
It blows. Again, this is why I asked Paul this the other day. I was like, is Greg Lopez a real person? Like,
he's been on the ballot like a lot.
What do you think of that method? So I think of the consistently running and losing. Mm. I think about, there's some candidates here in Denver when we look at the mayor's race who run every term, right? Yeah. Every time. And I don't understand it other than like it's a protest to bring your issues to light.
I have yet to see someone successfully badger their way into office, right? Like lose 5 times and then win. I've never seen that happen. Okay. I don't think it has. But I think it's different for everybody. Greg Lopez was the mayor of Parker in his 20s. He's not in his 20s anymore. This was a long time ago.
30 years ago.
Yeah. And like
Parker was a different place.
He's never been in the state legislature. Like, he's never run for any other office. He just thinks he should be governor over and over. And the voters repeatedly say no, thank you. And he goes, but what about now?
That just seems like so brutal to do to yourself over and over again.
You know, I wouldn't. I don't recommend it.
I just wondered, as a person that looks at strategy for politicians, is this an effective strategy?
So, like, to be clear, like, there are people who have run and lost and then run and won. And that sort of thing happens. But, like, the Greg Lopez banging your head against the wall thing for 2 decades, I haven't seen that work.
Okay. Well, thank you. I just needed some clarification. I want to bang my head against the wall when I see that happening.
So then we got to talk about Heidi Gonal a little bit, because she's the other Republican candidate for this nomination. And I mean, I knew her beforehand as a CU regent and the Camp Bow Wow company. She founded and ran that for a long time. Actually, kind of a sweet story, the way she founded that. It was like always her and her husband's dream to open a doggy daycare, and she got married to this person, and then this person like tragically died 2 years into their marriage.
Oh, that's really
sad. And so
sad.
She then carried out the dream alone.
Oh, I'm sorry, Heidi. Regardless of her political affiliations, that's really a bummer.
So what else is important to know about Heidi Gonal, Ian?
Well, as a CU regent, she defended the hiring of John Eastman, who is now one of the like superstars of the January 6th committee. If you don't know John Eastman, he was the visiting scholar of conservative thought at the University of Colorado's Bruce D. Benson Center for the Study of Western Civilization. I'm pretty sure I got that 100% correct.
Okay.
The Bruce Benson Center basically exists to like bring right wingers to Boulder to trigger the libs. That is like the entire stated mission of the organization in so many words, not those ones.
Very cool.
Yeah. they bring Charlie Kirk and, you know, other abhorrent human beings to come and yell at liberals, I guess.
Who are paying to go to school there.
The whole
like
thing
is taunting and fucking with the people that pay your bills.
It's wild shit. And the taxpayers. I mean, like the
right, and the taxpayers. Good
so
point.
I'm pretty sure the Benson Center does not have taxpayer funding. It's its own independent thing. But Heidi Gonal actually is a donor to that organization. She is published on
Very
their donor
cool.
lists. Oh. And then when Eastman got in, some emails were recently released that were Cora'd. They were open records requested. Regent Gonal said something like, well, John Eastman's our new conservative scholar, and he's really riling people up right now. And there were several attempts that she made to meet with him when he became this visiting scholar, but she actually never got the chance to meet him in person. So now she's saying, well, I never met the guy. But she tried to have lunch with him a few times. This is like in correspondence. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he's the lawyer that sat down with Trump in the Oval Office and at whatever hotel that was when January 6th was happening. He was on the stage during the, quote, Save America rally on January 6th that prompted the deadly insurrection at the Capitol. And he's the one who came up with the whole Mike Pence can steal the election, alternative slate of electors thing. And now finally, I mean, like 14 months of trying to get the press to pay any attention to this, quite frankly, finally, now that the January 6th commission is happening and the primary is upon us, they're going, oh, this guy played a pretty major role in it. He was at CU. And how did he get there?
Heidi.
I mean, she had something to do with it.
But does she, the question is her, though. Like, does she, where does she stand on the January 6th stuff? Does
she won't believe answer in the big any lie? Questions like that. I mean, like, she does this wonderful trick that maybe a consultant told her, which is you have to say Joe Biden is the president. That's what she says. Well, Joe Biden is the president. And it's like, okay, how did he get there? Did he win the election? And she just won't answer the question. So, I mean, this is a real pickle for Republicans. The vast majority of Coloradans know that Joe Biden legitimately won the election, especially here, like it or not, by 13.5 points. Like, this was not close in Colorado, right? He won a huge, obvious victory in Colorado, as did John Hickenlooper over Cory Gardner. There were not very many close races in 2020 here.
Do you think that the Colorado Republicans... like, is that really the question at the heart of this election for them? Is that, like, is it the big lie? Is that the big issue?
I think a lot of primary voters are gonna vote based on whether or not their candidate has accepted the big lie. I think that's true. I think there are other candidates that are probably, other voters who are voting on a host of other issues, right? Abortion, LGBTQ rights, or lack thereof, I suppose, which is now apparently becoming the mainstream position of the Republican Party again, which is super awful. But I think the big lie is a huge driver of Republican politics right now.
Is Lopez a lie guy?
Oh, yeah. He comes right out and says it, as does Ron Hanks, who we'll get into in a minute here, I think.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a second to talk about Ron Hanks.
Winding through the canyon, her anticipation rose. Monarch Casino Resort Spa, the epitome of mountain chic. Her pulse raced as she sat down at a high-limit Baccarat table. Hungry? She chose the Southwest Fusion flavors of Bistro Mariposa before ascending to Bliss, a top-rated spa Monarch, for a signature massage treatment. She slept well in her luxurious hotel room, fulfilled by her stay. Write your own story at monarchblackhawk.com.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-GAMBLER.
All right, we're back, and we're talking about our next race on the GOP Colorado primary slate. This one is the race to take on Michael Bennett for another 6 years in the Senate.
Where's Michael Bennett approval rating-wise? How is he popular?
I can tell you. So Michael Bennett currently has a 41% favorability rating, according to the latest Rocky Mountaineer, and a 31% unfavorability rating, with 28% saying they don't know. So that's plus 10. That's good. If you're an incumbent running for re-election, you double-digit favorability net approval rating is a very good thing. And then when you test him against his potential opponents, you start to see some interesting things as well. If you do Michael Bennett versus Ron Hanks, Ron Hanks was at January 6th. He's one of the more conservative members of the state legislature. He threatened to choke the House Minority Leader at least once. Or versus Joe O'Day, Bennett beats both of them by 13 points.
Can you imagine a woman threatening to choke somebody? I mean, that's just...
like, just like, imagine it, or like
I
in
just,
real life?
I just think about these things that these men get away with, and I'm like...
It's like a
women
it's like
get
a
in trouble for wearing the wrong.
Item.
Hillary got in trouble for wearing the wrong color thing.
You're
I'm excited about
right.
it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, I just when I hear that stuff, I'm like, the privilege in being able to threaten somebody with violence, physical violence, and still have your job,
like in front of reporters, and
amazing.
Then, not just that, but then become the nominee for U.S. Senate via caucus, beating
says
out four other people and being the only one to get on the ballot. So yeah, you're onto something there.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine. So Bennett beats Hanks, according to this poll, 50-37, and he beats O'Day 49-36. So a statistical like tie between the two Republicans, but Bennett clobbers both of them by 13 points. And it's early. These candidates are undefined. They're also not doing a super great job campaigning. And it's not going to be a super good year to be a Democrat anywhere, but Colorado seems to be holding up much better than many other swing states.
Interesting.
I feel like this is the race where the two Republicans really are quite different.
Sure.
That's been my impression.
Yeah.
There's Hanks is like clearly the lie guy, wingnut.
Right.
But O'Day, much more of the, reasonable, not so much dipping into this like irrational wing, these crazy beliefs.
That's like, certainly what they want you to think. And O'Day has said not just Joe Biden is president, but Joe Biden won the election and I don't like it. Like, so I credit for that for sure. But the point
for telling the truth. Thank you for telling the truth.
Sure. But it's kind of hard to do as a Republican candidate. Yeah, that's so true. Again, he gets like a couple points
bar.
In my book,
but where
he loses the points and then goes into the red for me. Both of them are a vote for Mitch McConnell for majority leader. That's the difference. Both of them are a vote for Republican nominees to the U.S. Supreme Court. This is like the thing with Cory Gardner, right? He was supposed to be this moderate, reasonable guy who was going to work across the aisle and not be partisan. He put three Trump judges on the Supreme Court who are now going to overturn Roe versus Wade. Right. And in the Denver Post editorial board's endorsement of Gardner in 2014, this is a thing that every Democratic operative in the state of Colorado has seared into our brains forever. Contrary to Udall's tedious refrain, Gardner poses no threat to abortion rights. That was obviously not right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just kind of baked into this race, though, stuff like that. Like, they'd vote with their caucus. These are going to be junior senators. They're not going to have any clout in Congress.
The U.S. Senate is 50-50 right now. There's 50 Republicans and 50 Democrats. Kamala Harris is the tiebreaker. We can't really get very much done because of the filibuster, and that's another conversation. But if they get a 51-seat majority, and it's because Colorado sent a Republican to the U.S. Senate, Mitch McConnell's in charge, and then if Biden or whoever the Democratic nominee is loses in 2024, get ready for more conservative judges with lifetime appointments who will chip away at abortion rights, who will chip away at LGBTQ plus rights, who will chip away at true religious freedom by allowing taxpayer money to go toward religious education, like what just happened in the Maine case the other day.
Who do you think Bennett would rather face?
I'm going to think like Hanks would be obviously easier to beat, but I think Bennett wins both of these against both of these candidates. It's a question of like, does it turn into like a relatively expensive race, or does the Republican National Committee just walk away from it if it's Hanks? I mean, I think that's obvious. And you know this, there are ads being flown around by Democratic groups that are saying, you know, Ron Hanks is too conservative for Colorado, pointing at his record, which is 100% anti-gun control, 100% anti-abortion, like big lie, all this stuff.
Interesting.
So the Democrats are spending in favor of Hanks.
I wouldn't say in favor of. I'd say they're letting voters know who he is and what he believes. And Joe O'Dea is trying to let voters know who he is and what he believes. But until pretty recently, he wasn't on the air with any substantial amount of money. And he was spending most of his time, and his staff seemed to be spending most of their time, like complaining about what was happening in this situation instead of like getting their guy out there and making an argument for his candidacy.
I'm still not clear on where the Democrats are spending here. Are they're trying to push Hanks down, or they're trying to prop Hanks up, or they're trying to push O'Day down, or they're trying to prop O'Day up?
I can't tell you what the folks who are funding those ads want. I don't know their intentionality, but it is not an uncommon tactic to try and get the least electable opponent for the general election nominated for the primary.
That's why you're here. That is so helpful. Thank you, Ian. That was great. That was exactly what I needed.
And people are freaking out about it a little bit. But again, like, this is only possible because the Republicans didn't have their act together. The party nominated Ron Hanks at the convention and nobody else. They had a choice between Ron Hanks and Deborah Flora and Gino Campana and Eli Bremmer and a whole host of Republicans from all sorts of walks of life of the party. Ron Hanks is the only one who made the ballot through the assembly and convention. That means the party base supports him. That's not anybody's fault but theirs.
Yep.
I mean, they created this monster, this like horrible big lie genie came out the bottle. And now they're like, don't pay any attention to this thing that we let happen. Please vote for the guy that the establishment wants you to vote for. And it's like, nah, y'all had plenty of opportunity to like stand up against Trump and stand up against the big lie. And none of you did. And that is why you're here right now.
Well, I think we got to move on from this race. We've been talking about the big lie the whole show so far. In this race, we got the biggest liar of them all, I think.
That's really funny.
At least, I mean, right?
Sure.
We haven't talked about Tina Peters. We have to say who she is. She's the most recognizable Republican candidate for Secretary of State, which is the role that administers our elections. There's currently a Democrat in office, Jenna Griswold. So this Republican primary is to decide who gets to take on Griswold in the fall. But Peters has obviously garnered like national headlines for her hijinks this year. And Ian, can you briefly say who Tina Peters is?
She's the indicted current Mesa County clerk who has been prevented from overseeing the election that she is supposed to be overseeing as the Mesa County clerk and recorder. Mm-hmm. She allegedly, I think I have to say allegedly, made images and let unauthorized persons into the elections office to like make copies of the voting machines to give them to a group of people called the Cyber Ninjas. I'm not making any of this up. Who then did like the MyPillow Guys symposium and said, ha, this is proof the election was stolen. And there are like a lot of people who are even in that little Cyber Ninjas group who said, this doesn't say that at all. And we're out. So like that created a little fissure in the like big lie community.
Wow.
Have you been following the Tina Peters saga?
Not clearly close enough.
She was indicted by a Republican DA, Dan Rubenstein, in Mesa County. She's under investigation by multiple other law enforcement agencies, including the FBI. And her coworker, her deputy, I think, also was indicted on various charges.
That just makes her a renegade. That just makes her...
I love this shit so much because it's like Republicans are the party of law and order unless it's like rigging an election for Donald Trump.
Yeah,
and
then
it's
then
like, no, that's totally defensible. This is great stuff. Let's keep it up.
They all just want to win. They just want to win. They care about
you
winning.
Win by getting the most votes and by not nominating.
Well, they don't.
By counting the most votes.
I guess that's true, Paul.
And that's Tina Peters, and that's what she wants to do more of.
Well,
right?
So she's in a primary. So it's there's a three-way primary actually. So two Republicans were nominated at convention. Peters got top line. So when you get the most votes at the convention, you end up number one on the ballot. And studies show that has a small but not insignificant effect on the overall election. Like top line vote, line candidates tend to do better than lower on the ballot candidates, interestingly enough. So Peters is first, and there's this guy, Mike O'Donnell, who's second, who's a big lie guy, but he like seems to care mostly about like voter rolls and business licensing fees. And like, he's not... He didn't like try to actively like steal an election or prove that an election was stolen, I guess, despite all the evidence. And then you have Pam Anderson, who was the county clerk in Jefferson County for a long time, who is sort of like widely regarded as like a bureaucrat, like somebody who just goes to work and does her job, which is like how most clerks and recorders operate.
Yes.
And certainly used to operate. But now if you're a Republican clerk, you have to be insane. Anderson, to her credit, has said outright, no, the election was not stolen. Joe Biden won the election. Colorado's elections are safe and secure. But quite frankly, I'll just be honest, like having a Republican, even one that denounces the big lie, near the Secretary of State's office or in the seat scares me quite a bit, because then they'll be influenced by people in that party, whether they believe it or not.
Hmm. Yeah.
There's no separation.
Like,
there.
Like literally at this point, it's like there's one party that's pro-democracy, at least ostensibly, it's the Democratic Party. And there's one party that's like pro-authoritarianism or anti-democracy, and it's the Republican Party. And there's mountains of evidence to support this.
And so the Secretary of State, you've said, is the person that oversees the state's elections.
Yeah, and like...
And these people that don't believe in the last election's results are competing to win this race.
I think it would be pretty shocking if Tina Peters did not end up as the nominee. I mean, if maybe there's like a big lie split and
really?
Like she loses some of her support to O'Donnell because she's kind of a little too high profile, and maybe they don't like it that she like tried to kick a cop recently, stuff like that.
That's what I was thinking about.
It's possible.
I hadn't heard that. That's crazy.
But quite frankly, like no one is really campaigning in this area either. Mm. I mean, Pam Anderson now has some dark money group behind her that's kind of going after Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, a Democrat, and Tina Peters at the same time trying to pave the way for her election. But Pam Anderson's barely raised $100,000, which is like not enough money to win a competitive race for House District 6, for instance,
right.
Let alone a statewide primary election for Secretary of State.
And how is Secretary Griswold doing favorability wise right now?
We don't have numbers on her actually.
Okay.
But the generic ballot, which is like a pretty good barometer for down ticket races like the treasurer, Secretary of State, Attorney General in Colorado, still favors Democrats by quite a bit. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that people might not be in love with Joe Biden right now, and they might not be in love with Democrats either, like lefties who are like, you haven't done enough, or moderates who think they may have gone too far on social issues or whatever. But at the same time, they look at the Republican Party and they go, but none of these people are remotely electable, and we can't send somebody to the U.S. Senate who's going to vote for Mitch McConnell. Like, Colorado won't do that.
Well, I think we got to wrap up there. Ian Silveri, thank you so much for joining us and educating us and helping us get through this morass.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here, Ian.
We taught people how to be journalists, but not the business side. And that's not enough anymore. And so for people who want to do these things, they need to understand the business side of the industry.
The following conversation is sponsored by the Master of Arts in Journalism Entrepreneurship at CU Boulder. Find out more at colorado.edu/program/MAJE. Hi, I'm David Plott, CEO of CityCast. CU Boulder offers one of the most interesting, and I would argue most useful, journalism programs anywhere. A master's degree in journalism entrepreneurship. I'm fired up to talk about it today with Pat Ferrucci, who's Director of Graduate Studies for the Department of Journalism at CU Boulder. Pat, welcome to CityCast.
Thanks, David. Happy to be here.
So as someone who has spent my career straddling journalism and the business of journalism, I'm really excited to talk about this because I think it's really smart for CU Boulder to offer this kind of program. Can you start by telling us what is journalism entrepreneurship?
It's how we see the industry going. 20 years ago, if you wanted to be a journalist, you finished your program and you got a job in like broadcast or print, and then you just spent your career doing that. But journalism isn't one thing anymore. And so our program kind of reflects that reality. There's all these different types of journalistic organizations that have popped up, a lot of them being small and kind of just one person or a few people. And so it's really about the business of journalism and how to create kind of a self-sustaining, as best possible, organization where you can kind of cover a specific niche or thing that is what you want. Also, as a journalist in today's marketplace, you kind of have to be your own brand. So the program really teaches you how to figure out who you are as a journalist and market yourself.
How long have you been offering this program?
So we will be starting, I believe, our fourth year in the fall. We're seeing our first graduates last year. We have them in traditional media. We have one who just started at McSweeney's. We have one who's starting their own local high school sports website. So kind of across the board, from everything from traditional paths to more entrepreneurial paths like we hope.
Is the program online or in person?
So it's online primarily, but if you're around here, most of the offerings are also in person and you could kind of do a hybrid. Being in the Front Range, where there is this kind of entrepreneurial spirit, this kind of tech culture, I think gives people a leg up.
Who do you think is the kind of student who's going to benefit from your master's in journalism entrepreneurship?
We were really looking at people who are kind of in a mid-career stage, who either are in journalism and kind of want that extra knowledge to be able to do their own thing, but also people in other areas. I think we're in a moment, right, where journalism's really important. And I think we're seeing a lot of students, both at the undergrad and graduate level, who really see how they can make a difference and need to make a difference, whether it's activism, whether it's sustainable journalism. And that's what we're looking for, those people who are passionate about doing something with journalism that might not be the traditional path.
Pat, what goals do students have when they begin the master's program?
Well, I think the main goal is that students want to do something specific. So for example, we have a student who is really interested in doing humorous feature stories about people in the tech and business industries. That's not something that you'll find in regular journalism necessarily. And so he's really trying to create his own brand and his own organization that just does this, really talks to disruptors in a kind of humorous way. And he seems to be doing well at it.
Pat Ferrucci, thanks for joining me on CityCast Denver. Learn more about CU Boulder's Masters in Journalism Entrepreneurship at colorado.edu/program/MAJE.
Thanks so much, David.
That's all for the week here on CityCast Denver. Our producers this week were me, Paul Caroli, and Lizzie Goldsmith. Bree is our host. Peyton Garcia writes our morning newsletter. Our music is by Los Mocochetes with additional mixing by Tyler Lindgren. If you haven't already, subscribe and rate the show 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at CityCast Denver and tell a friend about us the next time you see him. You can sign up for our daily newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm.
I think I remember the Big Red theme song. Is it like the Make It Last?
The Big Red freshness lasts right through it. Your make fresh it. Breath goes on and on while you chew it.
Say goodbye a little longer.
Make it last a little longer.
With the breath long lasting freshness. With Big Red.